I'm Billy, I'm an alcoholic. Billy. I'm grateful I get to be sober today. Man, this place is beautiful. I've never been in here before. This is a really nice church. Thank you, Eric, for giving me an opportunity to come up here, carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And do I need to raise it higher? You just got to believe. Do that. Nope. All right. Here, we're going to get this. Boom. Boom. Tighten it up. Success? Oh, yeah. All right. Should I start over? I'm Billy. I'm an alcoholic. Yeah. I'll tell you what, guys. Everything that's good in my life, I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I mean that wholeheartedly. I am grateful I get to be sober today, and I got a real good life because of Alcoholics Anonymous, because of what you people taught me how to do, taught me how to make decisions, taught me how to live life, and as a result, I got a lot of gratitude. So, yeah, I drank a lot of alcohol, you know? My first drink came when I was 16 years old, which I know is a late start for Alcoholics Anonymous. I probably could have used a drink in kindergarten, but I held off till I was 16. And so my first drink, I was at a debate tournament, which is probably the nerdiest first drink in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's mine. And so, I'm in high school. Went to join the debate tournament. And I'll tell you what, leading up to this, I was just, for the most part, man, I was a good kid. I followed the rules, and I got good grades, and I sat in the front of the class, and I did what my mom told me to do. And mostly, all that is really just out of fear, honestly. I was just afraid to step out of line and to get in trouble and to, you know, not follow the rules. I had a lot of fear growing up. My mom would say I was shy. Shy is a fancy way of saying scared. I had a really hard time connecting with other human beings. I couldn't talk to anybody. I could hardly look at anybody. And so I go to this debate tournament, and I'd seen people drink before, and I'd seen people, you know, do a little bit of drugs here and there, nothing too crazy. And for whatever reason, that night, I decided, I'm going to do it. I'm gonna give it a shot. And so that's what I did. I had a shot of vodka, and it burned, and it tasted awful, and I didn't feel anything. So I had like five more. And that night, I became awesome. All of that fear melted away. All of that insecurity melted away. I was the life of the party. I was funny. I made friends with everybody. That morning, I could not look a girl in the eye, and that night I got laid. So it was like, alcohol. Yeah. We're doing that again. I woke up in the morning hungover, and I did not care. I could not wait for the next opportunity to drink, which came very quickly. I drank alcoholically immediately. There was no easing into it. It was, give me more of that. They weren't all that way, unfortunately. But I tried. And so I drank a lot. And very quickly, alcohol became more important than anything else in my life. Very quickly, it went from being a guy who cared a lot about doing the right things and not getting in trouble and getting good grades. And I got a family full of doctors and lawyers and high expectations. I'm the first alcoholic in my family. But none of that mattered anymore. What mattered now was, how do I get my next drink? And so I took my first drink when I was 16 years old. At 17 years old, I was leaving my parents' house. I could not live under their rules anymore. I could not live under their tyranny. They wanted all kinds of crazy stuff. They wanted me to, like, be home before midnight and not be drunk. And that doesn't make any sense. And so naturally, I moved out when I was 17. I couldn't get away fast enough. And I moved into this house over in El Sobrani with some guys who drank like I drank. And, you know, we had like, I don't know, 7-9 couches and DJ equipment set up in the corner. Like, we were just doing it, you know. A revolving door of people coming in and out at all times, day and night. And the party was on. Fun fact, I was a few years sober, and we were helping a new guy move. We were helping him move into his SLE. And so we're grabbing his stuff, and we go over to the SLE, and it's that house. We're like, what? Yeah. So that house needed to get sober too, apparently. Yeah. 19 years old, I meet my wife, Tina. Tina's fantastic. If you haven't met her, she's sitting right there, and she's great. Yep, you got it. Beautiful, smart, funny, had a good job. Most importantly, drank like me. Like any two good alcoholics, we moved in together within a week of knowing each other. She had a 3-year-old son, so suddenly I was thrust into this stepdad role that I was totally prepared for at 19 years old. Her dad had a really good job at a really good company and hooked me up. Got me a really good job at a really good company. And so here I am. I'm 19. I got the girl. I got the job. And drinking is still fun. My fun lasted for a long time, drinking. You know, I know some people who took their first drink and boom, handcuffs. That's not my story, man. I had a lot of good times drinking. And it lasted for a while. And they told me it's fun, and then fun with problems, and then problems. My fun lasted. And, you know, I'm not the guy who's going to stand up here and tell you that my worst day sober is better than my best day drunk. I had some awesome days drunk. And I've had some really horrible days sober. But I will tell you that my worst day sober is better than my last day drunk. The end of my drinking was horrible. It's no way to live. But we'll get there. So, you know, I get this job, and I got the girl, and naturally, I, you know, drink more. And I don't know, there's a part in the book, in Bill's story, where it talks about drinking ceased to be a luxury, it became a necessity. And I can relate to that. And I don't know where I crossed that line. I know that I blew right on past it. I don't know exactly where it was. But at some point, drinking stopped being something that I did to increase my fun and my enjoyment of life, and it became something that I had to do in order to operate. I had to wake up in the morning and I had to drink in order to walk out the front door. I had to drink in order to take a shower. I had to drink in order to drive my son to school. How crazy is that? I had to drink in order to drive my son to school. If you say that in a room full of normal people, they throw shit at you. Alcoholics are like, yep. And I drove drunk probably every day of my adult life until I got sober. I was a daily drinker. I don't know why I don't have any DUIs. I don't know why I've never been to prison. I don't know why I've never been to jail. I've never been arrested. I've hardly ever even talked to a cop. I did plenty of bad stuff, but for whatever reason, God decided that's just not part of my story. And I'm grateful for that, because it gives me cool opportunities to do stuff like H&I. Without a record, I got to go into Vacaville up in prison, CSP Solano up there. They let me ride in. What a cool commitment. I got to sit there with people who were doing life in prison. And me, as this nerdy freaking kid who has nothing to do with anything prison-related, I had no idea what I was going to go in there and talk to these guys about. I had no idea what to expect. I mean, what are they going to get from me? And I went in there, and the people sitting in that room were just like me. They were exactly me. The only difference is they got drunk one night, and they pulled the trigger, and I didn't. Or they got drunk and got behind the wheel, and they hit and killed a family of five, and I missed them by an inch. And that was a really good commitment in H&I. to remind me to have perspective and have some gratitude on where I get to be today. Tonight on a Friday night, I'm not locked up because of something I did in a blackout. I get to be here with a bunch of people who at least pretend like they like me. And a wonderful wife that pretty sure she actually does like me. I'm very blessed today. And so, naturally, things didn't just stay good forever, obviously. I got here. And so we transitioned into fun with problems. And fun with problems looked a lot like me and Tina aren't getting along anymore. And we argue more than we have fun. And it was like every single night, what are we going to do tonight? Tonight we're going to have fun. Tonight we're going to drink and we're going to go out and we're going to have fun and we're not going to fight and we're not going to argue and it's going to be great. And I got a buddy who talks about spinning the wheel of misfortune. Every night, every time you pick up a drink, like, what's it going to land on this time, you know? Sleep on the couch or get in a fight or get a black eye. And one of those little things, one possibility, have a great time, you know? At some point, I started drinking in the morning. I think it started off as like this fun thing, like, oh, let's have some drinks and go to work, and it'll be super cool and fun. I guess it was cool and fun for a little bit, but then it was just waking up and drinking in the morning every single day. Like I said, couldn't get out the door without a drink. I remember walking out my front door one time, and we had the recycling can right over here. And there's this guy with the recycling can open, and he's in there, and he's grabbing all the recycling out because he wants to go make some money. And I walk out, and I shocked him. He wasn't expecting to see me. And he's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I was like, hey, man, don't worry about it. It's fine. No big deal. Take everything. It's good. I'm just heading out of here. And he says, oh, thanks. You know what? I know just what to get you for Christmas. Jack Daniels. There's like 11 bottles of Jack Daniels lined up right there. And I remember thinking to myself, man, Tina drinks too much. Because it's all her fault, don't you know? Like, I don't take any accountability for anything. I'm a finger pointer. God's calling. So yeah, I show up work one day and I'm drunk, obviously, because I'm drunk every day. But this time, somebody tells me they could smell alcohol on my breath. And it was like, whoa. Like I said, I never got caught for anything. So here I am caught. And the person's, you know, they're all cool about it. They're like, hey, don't worry about it. You know, just don't do it again. I'm like, yeah, I'll never do that again. And you know what that did for me is it just kind of rattled me. It shook me. For a moment of clarity, I'll say, where I looked at my life and I said, wow, I drink every morning and I drink every night and I drive drunk every day and I'm at work drunk all the time. This isn't normal. And so I made a decision. I decided right then and there that from now on, I'm going to drink like a normal person. Mm-hmm. And to prove that I have complete control, I decided I was going to stay sober for a certain amount of time. And I put together 14 days without a drink. The whole time, just like, I'm not going to drink, I'm not going to drink, I'm not going to drink. Holding on tight, you know? During those 14 days, everything became clear. It was all Tina's fault. She's the reason I drank. She's the reason that I was miserable. She's the reason that, you know, whatever. Global warming, you name it. And so I told her. And that went great. I said to Tina, I said, you. You need to get sober or you need to find somewhere else to live. And so she left. Yeah. I don't know what I was expecting to happen. I don't think I was expecting her to leave. Don't you know how great I am? You can't want to leave me. And what happened was Tina left, and I didn't see her again for like another 8 months. She went out and she went straight down. And yeah, she, I'm not going to stand up here and tell you her story, but for me, what happened is that the source of all my problems was gone. And so naturally, I rewarded myself with a drink, and then another one, and a few more. And I think that, man, after that, I got those 14 days. I don't think I ever got maybe more than a day or a day and a half after that without a drink. I needed it, you know? And I'd come home from work, and I just had to drink. And I'm just, it's just me, alone. There's nobody there to blame it on. There's nobody else that I can just say, hey, it was, you know, their idea or their fault or this or that. I mean, it was just me and Jack Daniels. I'm not the kind of alcoholic who, you know, has a bunch of crazy, wild stories of drinking. You know, I never came out of a blackout in Cancun or anything like that. I went home and I closed the door and locked the door and shut the blinds and put my phone in the other room on silent and sat there with a bottle of Jack Daniels and a 2 liter of Coke and drank myself into oblivion. That was my idea of a great time. My drinking went from fun and partying to just sad, lonely, pathetic. And I didn't want to live that way anymore. And I didn't like it anymore. You know, I tried to control and enjoy my drinking. I told myself I was just going to have two, you know. And then I'd have my two drinks, and it's still like 7 o'clock in the morning. And what's one more? And then I'm gone, you know. Okay, that's it. I'm done. I got to stop. Can't even have two. I'm going to quit drinking. Done. Right after this one. And every morning I woke up and I'd tell myself, I am not going to drink today. That was my first thing I would tell myself when I wake up in the morning. I would tell myself on the way to the kitchen to grab a bottle of Jack Daniels that I wasn't going to drink. Because my typical day looked like I'd wake up in the morning, I'd grab a bottle of Jack Daniels, and I'd pour myself 5 double shots because I drank out of shot glasses because somehow that's less alcoholic than drinking out of the bottle. It made sense at the time. And I'd take those, boom, 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 and I'd blast off because I like to be drunk now. I was never the guy who wanted to ease my way into it. I was never the guy who was like, I'm just going to have a couple. If I'm going to drink, I'm drinking for effect. I want to be gone. I don't want to be here. I don't want to experience reality. I'd like to drink on an empty stomach because it hit me faster. Like, that's the kind of drinking I like to do. And so, yeah, I'd wake up in the morning, I'd tell myself I'm not going to drink, and then I'd go drink. And I'd be at work telling myself I'm not going to drink today. And driving home from work saying, I'm not going to drink tonight. 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 The whole drive home just thinking about not drinking. And I get to the stoplight, and my house is right over here, and my liquor store's on the corner, and I am not going to drink tonight. I'm not going to drink tonight. I'm not going to drink tonight. And I'm just sitting there at the red light, man, just thinking about not drinking. The light turns green, and somewhere in the middle of my turn, my brain just goes, F it, and I turn into the liquor store. Just powerless over alcohol. I could not stop myself. And I'd walk in there, and the guy behind the counter, he's already got a bottle of Jack Daniels out because he knows exactly who I am and what I'm doing there. And I go and I grab that bottle, and I just start feeling better already just holding it in my hand. I know that relief is on the way. And I go up to the house, and I pour myself my 5 double shots, and boom, 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 and blast off, feel amazing for like 8 minutes. And then the world comes crashing back in, and I did it again. I told myself I wasn't going to drink, and I drank. And I'm a piece of shit. And my life sucks. But I started, so I might as well finish. And not drink the rest of that bottle. And I did that every day. Over and over and over. Meanwhile, Tina was starting to come back around a little bit. And so we decided we were going to stage an intervention for her. I don't need one. Because during all this, right, I'm drinking alone. And so the rest of the world doesn't see what I'm doing every single day. And right now, all the heat in the world is on Tina because she's missing. We had to file a missing persons report. We don't know where she's at. She's got the problem, don't you know? My in-laws took me to Al-Anon. Yeah. They thought I could use some Al-Anon. And so I went to a couple of their meetings. Al-Anon's fantastic, by the way. No shade on Al-Anon. Not the place for me. I belonged in this program. And I know that because I was sitting in those Al-Anon meetings, listening to everybody talk about their alcoholics, and thinking, yeah, wow, I can relate to that. Oh, shit, yeah. Yeah, that's me too, okay. And I'd be sitting in the Al-Anon meeting staring at the clock because I can't wait for the meeting to be over so I can go drink. So I didn't go to very many of those. But yeah, we had this intervention for Tina, and we tricked her good, right? We told her we got some money. Yeah, we did a garage sale, and here's your portion of the money. And so, you know, we get this intervention set up, and she no-shows on us. We're like, dang, okay. So we set it up for another day. But on this other day that we set it up is the same day I have, like, a barbecue at my buddy's house. You know what I mean? And so it's fine. I'll just hit the barbecue in the morning. Intervention in the afternoon, all in a day's work. So I go to the barbecue, and I'm like, you know, I'll just have a drink or two, no big deal. So I had a drink or two or, and a few more and some more after that. And I showed up to Tina's intervention. I think I was drunker than she was. Yeah. And, you know, there's a part in the book that talks about how we get tight at exactly the wrong moment. So December 29, 2012, I woke up face down in a pile of puke. The last pile of puke that I've woken up face down in thus far, knock on metal. One more time, I woke up in the morning, I told myself I'm never going to drink again. And the only thing that was different this time is that I took action. I did something. At that time, my in-laws, my mother-in-law, my father-in-law had 25 years of sobriety. I knew that Alcoholics Anonymous existed. I knew that it worked. I just didn't want to be one of you. You know, I just really wanted to control and enjoy my drinking. Don't you know? I could do it. That morning, I was supposed to go over to their house, and I was supposed to get my mother-in-law, Debbie, and there were some nieces and nephews, and Tina was coming back around for a little bit, and I was supposed to grab all them, put them in the truck, and drive down to San Jose to watch How to Train Your Dragon on Ice. And I was so hungover. I was so destroyed. Could hardly walk. And I stumble into my in-law's house, and I go over to my mother-in-law, and I'm just like, Debbie, I feel really bad. I'm so hungover right now. I told her my blood hurts, and I think I need to go to an AA meeting. And she said, I'm so happy. She gave me this big hug. What? Why are you happy? This is terrible. This is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. I'm never going to have fun again. Because, man, I was having fun. Sunday morning, 8:30 a.m., she took me over to the Elsa Brandy Fellowship. And I remember walking up the stairs, having no idea what I was going to expect in there. I'd never been to an AA meeting. I don't know. I just thought people were going to be sitting in a circle just crying because they don't get to drink anymore. I don't know. I was ready to be resigned to a life where we're stupid, boring, and glum. You know, I was just like, it's over. And I remember walking up the stairs, and the first thing I heard was laughter. I heard people up there laughing. And man, I needed to hear that. I hadn't laughed in a long time. I hadn't smiled or felt good in a long time. And there were people up there who were laughing and smiling and feeling good. And I'm so grateful that that was the first thing that I heard when I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. There's nothing else that could have impacted me more than just simple laughter. And I walked upstairs, and I go into the room, and there's, you know, some of these people are here tonight, and they're smiling, and they're talking to each other, you know, and they got shiny eyes, clean clothes, you know, and they got, they're living. They got jobs and they got successful marriages and, you know, they got cars with insurance and registration and they're doing it. And so I walked in there just like clutching my little mother-in-law who's like, yay high. And she was the secretary for the meeting, so she abandoned me and went up to the front. And I sat up in the front like a good little nerd. And the speaker that morning got up there and he talked about being powerless over alcohol. And I heard that. And I felt that. I felt his alcoholism speaking to my alcoholism. And then throughout the whole meeting, people are raising their hands and they're talking about being powerless over alcohol and they're talking about all this cool stuff they did. And now they got this real life. And for the first time in a long time, I felt hope. Because I knew you guys had been through what I'd been through, or worse. And here you are sitting here sober and happy. That's really important. And happy, very important, because I didn't get sober to be miserable. And what I found is when we work the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous and practice the stuff in my daily life, I get to be sober and happy. And so at the end of that meeting, I got surrounded. I got accosted by all these guys, giving me their phone number and giving me a big book and writing stuff in there and tell them to call me. And the guy who was standing up front, who was chairing the meeting, said, call me tomorrow. I don't like calling people. You know, it's not really my thing. I'd rather just drink myself to death. But I walked in AA desperate, fresh out of good ideas. You know, my attitude in my first AA meeting very quickly became, tell me what to do and I'll do it. Because my life sucks and I don't want to drink anymore. And you guys got something here. I don't know what it is, but you clearly got it. And so when a guy told me, call me tomorrow, I called him. And he told me to come to his house that night and bring my book. So my first meeting was 8:30 a.m. Sunday morning. And I met with my sponsor Monday night for the first time. And again, I'm very grateful for my experience here in Alcoholics Anonymous that I walked in here broken enough that I took a couple of very simple suggestions and I found a sponsor on day one and got my ass in the book. Not because I had great ideas, but because I stopped having great ideas and just did what I was told. And that's been my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, is I am at my best when I sit down, shut up, and do what I'm told. And so we went up to his house, we read the doctor's opinion, and it talks about a physical allergy and a mental obsession. And I'm just like, yeah, okay. When I'm not drinking, I'm thinking about drinking. And when I start, I can't stop. That makes perfect sense. And so I met with my sponsor every week, Monday nights, go up to his house, read the next chapter in the book, go to a bunch of meetings in between, meet a bunch of people, get a home group. In the meantime, like I said, Tina was starting to show up again, and she lands in MPI over in Oakland. And at this point, things are bad. I spend a lot of my share just like talking about how bad things were with Tina. They're great now. Sometimes I forget to mention, like, we're good. But then things were terrible. And so she's at MPI, and I remember I was sitting in my home group meeting, Friday night candlelight in Pinole, still my home group meeting. Been there since my first Friday sober. It's awesome. Come check us out. And I guess they're letting Tina make a phone call, and so she's calling me, and I'm just like, ignore, ignore, ignore. And finally I walk outside, and I'm just like, what? And we just had this terrible conversation. Because, like I said, things were just really bad. And hung up the phone, walked out into the parking lot, just started walking. Not sure where I was going. And I remembered what my sponsor told me, because he very quickly, very early on, took me to the 11th step in the big book. Because for me, the idea of a God or a higher power was clearly going to be a problem. When I got sober, I didn't believe in God. I didn't want to believe in God. And so he's like, okay, here's the 11th step. And what it said was, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. And he said, remember that? I want you to do that. He said, attempt prayer. Try it. Whether you believe in it or not, just go through the motions, give it a shot, see what happens. Okay. I can do that. Nothing's going to happen. And so I stopped mid-stride, walking out in the parking lot. And I'll tell you what, man, on autopilot, 40-something days sober, I'm walking to my car. My car is going to the liquor store. That's where it goes. That's what autopilot takes me to. And I stopped, and I remembered what my sponsor told me to do, and I said, okay, God, what do you want me to do? And I felt a very strong gut feeling. And I'll tell you, you know, my conception of a higher power, what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous here, and it's evolved quite a bit over the time that I've been sober. But in that moment, the way God showed up for me was a very strong gut feeling, and that gut feeling was right. There was no doubt that that was the right thing when it showed up. And I've experienced this quite a few times in my life where a gut feeling shows up and it is right. It may be scary, it may be challenging, it may be difficult, but there is no doubt that it's the right thing to do. And that night, walking out of my home group meeting to go get drunk, that gut feeling said something very simple to me. It just said, get your butt back in that meeting. And I turned around, I walked back into that meeting, and I stayed sober that night. And that was my first experience, conscious experience, with a higher power in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's not like I was suddenly convinced. It's not like I was just like, woo, God! But that was the beginning. That was the first small little step in the direction of finding a higher power. And that higher power that I found here in Alcoholics Anonymous has changed everything, man. Everything. I remember reading the book, and it takes us back to Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. Right, and it talks about a change in attitude, a change in perspective. And at that moment, I was not here for a spiritual experience. But a change in attitude and a change in perspective, that makes sense. I need that for sure. Soon after that, I had some friends over at my house. We were going to play cards. And we were going to play some cards. And so we played cards, and they brought alcohol because they didn't know I was sober yet, because I didn't broadcast it. And you know, I told them I wasn't drinking. They're like, oh, you know, do you want us to take it away? And I said, no, don't worry about it. It's totally fine. Just don't offer me any. Take it all with you when you go. I was super cool. I'd been doing AA for like 40 days. I got it. You know what I mean? Expert. And we played cards, and we had a great time. I had fun, and I didn't feel like drinking the whole night. And they took the stuff, and they left, and at the end of that night, I was just like, ha! Got it. Went to bed feeling great about life. Woke up in the morning, opened up the fridge, and there was one beer in there. Still riding the high, I was just like, I got this. I'm just going to dump it down the sink, call my sponsor, tell him how great I am. And I remember standing over the sink, and it was like a glass bottle with a cork on it. And I'm working on this thing, and I finally get the cork out of it, and I'm standing over the sink, and I get the cork out, and the smell hits me. And my mind went blank. Absolutely blank. 2 seconds ago, I had a head full of AA, I was dumping this thing down, I was going to high-five whoever came up at me next, and all I knew in that moment was, I need that. That was the only feeling that was going on in my body. And I was frozen with this thing in my hand. And I don't know how long I stood there. And at some point, something, God, came over me, and I just threw it into the sink, and I stepped back, and I said, oh, shit. And for me, that was the moment when knowing I'm an alcoholic turned into knowing I'm an alcoholic. I got this thing. I really do. There is no doubt in my mind. There's no doubt in my soul. I belong in Alcoholics Anonymous. I cannot drink like a normal person. I cannot operate like a normal person. I need this place. And if there wasn't already a fire under my ass, that lit one even harder. And it was like, I'm in, man. Because the results speak for themselves. Look around these rooms. You got people who've been sober for a long time, who are successful and who are living life. If you can do it, I can do it. And all the people that I looked up to in Alcoholics Anonymous took all the suggestions of Alcoholics Anonymous. They had sponsors, they went to meetings, they sponsored other people, they had service commitments, they helped others, they did everything that this program suggests, and they lived happy and sober. Sign me up. I have not regretted that decision once, ever. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the process of working through the steps. Fourth step is scary. Fifth step is scary. I loved it. It is scary. I found out I'm an asshole. I didn't know. Yeah. I found out I'm selfish. I found out I have an anger problem. These were all huge revelations. Writing a fourth step and telling my sponsor a fifth step is the greatest thing I think I've ever done in my life. It changed who I am, how I operate, the way I look at the world, the things that I do. And you know what the next greatest thing has been? Helping somebody else do it. What a cool experience to help another alcoholic who's dying, like I was dying. And somebody just reached out his hand for fun and for free and said, I'm going to give up my Monday nights and read this book with you. How weird is that? And I get to be here today because of that. I have a responsibility to turn around and help the next guy out of that hole. And I take this AA stuff, man, it's life and death around here. Been to a lot of funerals, seen a lot of heartbreak. In the time that I've been sober, I'm sure lots of people in here have seen a lot of people come in and go out and not make it back. And I cherish every moment I get to be sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I said at the beginning that everything that's good in my life I owe to Alcoholics Anonymous, I mean that. And so what's life like today? Life is embarrassingly good today. I am uncomfortable talking about how good my life is. I feel like I'm bragging. And I don't want to give the impression that it's perfect. It is absolutely not perfect. But man, is it good. Compared to the life I was living before I got here, it doesn't even make sense. Alcoholics Anonymous taught me how to be a service. It taught me how to show up early. It taught me how to stay late. It taught me how to care about people, care about what I do. And I took those things, and I took them out into real life. And I learned how to be a good husband. And I learned how to be a good father. I learned how to be a good employee. Turns out, when you show up to work, and you do a good job, and you have a good attitude, people like it. Nowadays, the bosses that I've had over the years that I've been sober, they hug me when they see me. And when you show up and you do a good job, sometimes you get promoted. And then I got promoted again, and then I got promoted again, and today, I got a big job today. With a lot of responsibility. And a lot of people that report up to me. And I work for a huge company that you've all heard of. And I manage a really big chunk of Northern California. How did I get from drinking myself to death on my couch with no friends and no prospects and no chance at a life to having a successful marriage, a son who's about to be 25 and is living a good life? He's living a good life because AA taught me and his mom how to be parents. And I got a good job. I got family that cares about me, that loves me, that I love in return. I got friends that care about me, that love me, that I love in return. I mean, what more can I ask for? I got it made. And so any time in my life when I'm freaking out over some small crap that doesn't matter, I got to stop and I got to remind myself to be grateful. And for me, that has always been the fastest way for me to reconnect to God is through gratitude, is I start with, thank you, God. And there is always something I can thank God for. Thank you for the pillow I get to sleep on at night. Not everybody gets one of those. And as I thank God for everything in my life, it slowly reconnects me back to the sunlight of the Spirit. And the thing that I was worried about or stressing about or angry about suddenly seems so small and insignificant. And it puts life back into perspective. And I remember how good I got it. And these are the tools I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I walk away from this place, I'm going to lose it. I've seen it happen too many times to too many people. And so I keep my butt in the chair. My feet are trained to show up. To trust God, clean house, and help others. And I got a heart full of gratitude that I get to be here tonight. So with that, I think I've hit my time limit. Really appreciate the opportunity to come up here and talk with you guys. And thank you for having me.
How about another round of applause for Billy?
Dave, grateful recovering member. Here's a vision for you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we only know a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. Answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you can't transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and we will surely meet some of us, and you will surely meet some of us as we trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you, Dave. All right, now the time has come to say that the next month birthday speaker will be, speaker meeting will be September 11th at 8 p.m. right here. The speaker will be Dave S. from Moraga, and our host group will be the Candlelight Meeting from Saturday night. Let's thank again Billy. Thank you, guys. And now it's time for the 50-50 raffle drawing with Danny and Gene and Maureen. Thank you again, all three of you.
Thank you, Maureen, for filling in with Vinny, and for Vinny and Gene for pushing the tickets.
Can we have our speaker come up and pick the ticket, please?
Oh. Last time I did this, I picked two.
I didn't get a ticket.
I don't care whose tickets you pick.
Everybody go red.
305-506. 305-506. I guess it goes to me.
3, 2, 1.
Yeah, I guess so. Last call, 305-506. Hold on, some people got like 80 tickets. I probably should have said tonight's count was 479, so the winning is $240.
Woo.
All right, one more ticket. Second try. 184-934.
184-934.
Woohoo! Is that Andy? Is that Andy with an I?
Is that Andy? Right on.
Gas money, Andy! Gas money to get you to the meeting. Congratulations!
All right, congratulations. I want to thank you guys.